Behind the Bite podcast is part of a network of podcasts that are good for the world. Check out podcasts like the Full of Shit podcast, After the First Marriage podcast, and Eating Recovery Academy over at practiceofthepractice.com/network. Welcome to Behind the Bite podcast. This podcast is about the real life struggles women face with food, body image, and weight. We're here to help heal, inspire, and create better, healthier lives. Welcome.
Welcome to Behind the Bite podcast. I'm your host, Christina Castanini. I'm not quite sure what people really think I do when they hear I'm an eating disorder specialist, but I think it speaks volumes about our society and how toxic diet culture is by how often I get asked about which diet is best for them to lose weight. More recently, I've been getting asked about what it is I think about intuitive eating for weight loss. Now, I have to be honest, when I hear this, my head spins. Now, I can't say I don't understand why people would think intuitive eating is a diet or why they would think to ask me this. After all, it's all over the media and there are numerous articles out there, unfortunately, associating it with dieting and weight loss. However, I think it's so important to clear up this confusion once and for all. There needs to be clarity about what it is and what it isn't. So today you're in for a treat. I have someone here as a guest who is the absolute best person to do just that. Co-author of best-selling Intuitive Eating, Evelyn Tribole. She is the author of 10 books, including her newest book, Intuitive Eating for Every Day, 365 Inspirations and Practices. As an international speaker, Evelyn enjoys training health professionals on how to help their clients cultivate a healthy relationship with food, mind, and body through the process of intuitive eating. To date, there are over 1,300 certified intuitive eating counselors in 39 countries. The media often seeks Evelyn for her expertise, including the New York Times, CNN, NBC's Today Show, MSNBC, Fox News, USA Today, and The Wall Street Journal. Evelyn was the nutrition expert for Good Morning America and a national spokesperson for the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics for over 6 years. Evelyn qualified for the Olympic trials in the first ever women's marathon in 1984. Although she no longer competes, she is a wicked ping pong player and avid hiker. All right. So Evelyn, welcome. I'm so excited to have you on the show today.
I'm thrilled to be here.
All right. So I know there's a lot of confusion out there about intuitive eating, and I thought, who better to talk to about this and clear this all up than you? So, I know a lot of people have heard about intuitive eating, and it's certainly talked a lot about out there. However, I know a lot of my patients come in and they are so confused about it. And yeah. I know there's a lot out there in the social media right now. I know Gwyneth Paltrow talks about intuitive fasting, and I've read lots of articles quoting you about how to lose weight with intuitive eating.
Oh my God.
So
can you hear me reacting?
Yes. So, tell me what's going on in your mind, because I know my head spins.
So, you know, I'm going to start with some real basics, then some definitions, and then we'll get into whatever you want to get into. So, you know, it's really interesting. I really want to help spread the word of intuitive eating. And it's really a self-care eating framework that's rated in the dignity and respect of all bodies. You know, it's based on sound research. There's over 150 studies now on our work. There's an assessment tool. And so what's happening is getting really popular and diet culture starting to co-opt it. And there's always this delicate dance when you agree to do interviews, you know, and I do it in the hopes of getting the spreading the word out there. And sometimes what happens is I either get misquoted or I'm quoted accurately, but sandwiched between an article that's endorsing weight loss. And that does harm. And it's so problematic. And So what I want to do is to help clear up some of the confusion. And I think it's understandable this way. You know, when you have media making confusion, then when you look at right now, there's almost 500 million, like almost half a billion with the B hashtags on TikTok alone on intuitive eating. And people are putting in their own perspective. You know, they might be just posting just on one principle and someone sees that, oh my God, it's all about a, you know, eat whatever you want, whatever sticks to the walls and cares, big party. And so there's confusion. And so let's talk about what it is and what it isn't. So one of the first things I always go back to, let's go to the source. Let's look at the print. If you don't have time to read the book, fine. Let's go at least to the website and read the principles for free. Or you can go onto my Instagram account. I did a 10-day series in January 2021, really breaking down the principles with videos and those kinds of things. So there's resources out there. But the first principles reject the diet mentality. And that intuitive eating is about cultivating a healthy relationship with food, mind, and body. It is not about weight loss. It is not about changing your body. It's about healing the relationship, and then especially with somebody with an eating disorder, you know. And I get questions around weight all the time. When you start looking at the research on intentional weight loss, it is fraught with problems. You know, it increases weight stigma, it increases weight cycling, increases the risk of eating disorder. So anyone who is saying you can lose weight with intuitive eating, they are actually perpetuating harm with our model. Nowhere do we ever say that. In fact, one of my most popular posts on Instagram, I have updated it, reposted it now 3 times, and it's about how to spot fake intuitive eating. You know, so if someone is telling you you can seek weight loss, they don't know what they're doing. They don't know our model. They're co-opting our model. If it's having you count anything or measure anything for the purpose of losing weight, that's a problem. Keto is not intuitive. Noom is not intuitive. Fasting is not intuitive, you know? And so it's really interesting to see everyone trying to glom onto this. And so, you know, I think what happens is that people that have had tremendous healing, and I've heard unsolicitedly feedback, this has been life-changing work, they want to spread the word, and it gets popular, and then people want to take advantage of this. And I think what's exciting with the research that's coming out, there was a big meta-analysis just published, looking at the psychological correlates of intuitive eating. They reviewed over 90 studies, almost 100 studies actually, and found out all these positive things. And it's rooted in psychology. It's not about changing your body. And I think this speaks more to toxicity of our culture. It speaks to the need that we need to change healthcare policy. Diet culture has hijacked medicine. It's just profound and mind-boggling, all these things. And so sometimes it's really discouraging, you know? And yet, on the other hand, I think about, wow, we've got all this research coming out. We've got over 1,400 certified intuitive eating counselors in 37 countries. And so it's spreading. That's the good news. And so what's happening with diet culture and programs making money off of doing harm with weight loss, they're trying to separate themselves from weight loss. Even Weight Watchers is rebranded. Oh, we're WW. You know, Noom says, oh, we're not a diet. We use psychology. And can I cuss on here? I didn't ask you about that.
Oh, yes, please do.
Okay. So, I mean, this is the best. I'm just going to say it. It's a mind fuck. If someone says, oh, you just got to get your psychology straight, because it's completely ignoring the biological and psychological cascade that ensues when you're not getting enough to eat on a biological level, even if it's intentional, your cells think, oh my God, they're trying to kill me, you know, and we're going to get involved in compensatory eating responses, often loss of control eating, and there's nothing wrong with you. This is your body trying to survive. These are your cells trying to protect you. And so someone goes through this process and they end up thinking they're broken or there's something wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with you. It's our culture. And so that's why I'm out to spread the word and do damage control whenever is possible. And one of the magazines you were just telling about that I was quoted, I didn't even see that one, because usually I write letters to the editor, or I talk to the writer or whoever. And even then, sometimes with those kinds of avenues, it doesn't change anything. And so I say, go back. If sounds kind of wrong about this, go back to the source, you know. And now with so many people trained in this model, there are people that can answer those kinds of questions really quite well. Woo, I said a lot, didn't I? I think you only asked me one question. They're like, let me at this. Oh my goodness.
And I love the passion, because I think, oh my gosh, like, and I think people don't even know that they are steeping in diet culture. I just think people think it's normal. And that's the scariest part.
That's the hard. You know, I'll tell you what really gets me. You know, first of all, when Elise and I created this model, we did this because we saw so much suffering. You know, we went back to the research. We looked at our own clinical experience, looked at some contemporary consumer books. So we actually created this model as an antidote against dieting, you know, mm-hmm. And never in my wildest dreams, well, that I didn't think intuitive eating would become so popular, but also that diet culture would get so toxic. You know, back in the early, early days of the 80s and 90s, it was like, oh my God, don't eat fat. And now fast forward today, it's like, oh, throw butter in your coffee. It's cool. You know, and I sometimes, to keep my own sanity, I kind of view this as fashion. Fashion comes and goes, it comes and changes, you know? And so we need to be looking at this. And what we really need to be looking at for all your listeners out there is looking at the unintended consequences of whatever someone is putting out there. You know, they might not have intentions of hurting people, but this has an impact. And so we need to start looking at this. And the fact that right now, in the last study published just 2 years ago, they reviewed over 90 studies looking at the incidence of eating disorders worldwide, and it has doubled in the last time period that it was looked at. And I find that really scary. And I think that actually is an underrepresentation of what we're seeing. So this to me is where the real epidemic is, but there's not a lot of money being funded around research and all these kinds of things. And we need to get rid of this weight-centric model. And let's look at healing. If you want to pursue health, diet culture doesn't get to take that away from us, but health includes our mind, our relationship to our mind, to our body, to our thoughts, to our relationships that we're having with our family, our friends and loved ones, that gets interfered with when you are trapped in the dieting mind or the mind of the eating disorder, you know, for whatever reason. And I say this not to put, you know, any shame on anyone who might be right now listening, and there's parts of them that's still seeking weight loss and they want intuitive eating. And what I say, you know, this is really common. It doesn't mean you can't be an intuitive eater. This is a byproduct of our culture. It's a byproduct of our culture. And then the real question is, can you make this desire to heal or to be in recovery or to be an intuitive eater, can you make that the active screen on your computer? You can have many programs open, mm-hmm. even the program of there's part of me that wants, I have to speak in a language of parts. There's part of me that wants to lose weight. It's like, okay, how long has that been with you? How much of that is diet culture? How much of that comes from your family? How much of it is intergenerational? And then looking at, but what is it that I really want? How's this going to help in my recovery? So you can have conflicting thoughts like that. Know that they're there. I don't want people to ignore or pretend that's not the case. But the things that we work on behaviorally can be towards recovery and intuitive eating. And I'll tell you, the research that's been coming out on the protective nature of intuitive eating for the development of eating disorders and the prevention of binge eating, there was a small pilot study published last year, an intervention study, yay, where they actually, besides looking at associations, they used our intuitive eating workbook and basically asked the question, does this make a difference? And they took women with disordered eating behavior at universities, and it was very racially diversified on purpose intentionally, which is really, really good news. And they used the workbook either in a group setting or in an individual setting. And what they found across whatever setting that they were in, they saw improvement all along the way. Now, there's a caveat with this study. There wasn't a control group. It was a pilot study. So now the job is to do, let's do a big funded study and have a control group to go with this. And there's been a lot of research showing in kids, I don't know if you're familiar with the Project Eat study that's been going on, I think now for 20 years, they started following adolescents at the age of 11 through age 21. That was the first part of this longitudinal study. And they were looking at weight suppression practices in these kids and what happens as they grow up. Do they grow out of this? And what they find is the more someone is seeking to suppress their weight, the more they get into disordered eating behaviors and have problematic eating. And those researchers have now come to the conclusion that intuitive eating is really the way to go. You know, it's protective from the eating disorders. And when we start looking at some of the benefits besides psychological, intuitive eaters have a better sense of well-being. They're enjoying their food. They have more trust. And this issue comes up a lot. I have a lot of patients asking me, or just readers saying, I love the idea of intuitive eating, but I don't think it's going to work for my body. I don't trust it. Mm-hmm. And so I just had a book that was published. I talk about this a lot. I call it, you know, trust disruptors, that, you know, every time that you have been on some kind of diet, some kind of plan by whatever name you call it, that disrupts trust, you know? And so maybe it's the opposite issues. Your body can't trust you, you know, if you're not being nice to it and feeding it consistently, withholding food, the moment you have a chance to eat, it's going to inhale, you know, as a survival mechanism, not because there's anything wrong with you. And so conversely, you know, every time you honor your hunger with a bite of food, you are rebuilding this trust. So it's possible. It takes practice. It takes time. And it's very, very workable, you know?
Yeah, I hear that all the time. I'm so scared to try this. People say, gosh, when you say eat whatever you want, when you want, people say, I can't do that. I'm too scared. These foods are forbidden. You know, this label of the diet culture, you know, the bad foods, good foods, healthy foods, unhealthy foods. And I think that scares a lot of people. They're like, I don't trust myself.
You know, it does. And so one of the things I think we need to look at is where is this person at that who's considering intuitive eating? And it's okay to be ambivalent. It's okay to be scared and not know. Everyone is welcome on this path. But if we're looking at somebody who's in the throes of an eating disorder or somebody who's just coming into recovery, you know, it's important to get support along the way. You know, sometimes what we need to do is we need to be working on self-care practices before we even get into intuitive eating, looking at nourishment as self-care. You know, if somebody has been in the throes of anorexia and restricting, for example, their hunger and fullness cues can really be off. Because with malnutrition, as you know, digestion slows down. You can get early and prolonged fullness, you know. Mm-hmm. And so if they were just to simply rely just on hunger, it wouldn't be enough for their body. And it's not that their body's not working. It's trying to survive starvation, basically. And then we throw in the complexity of emotion that now this person has anxiety about eating. They have fear about eating. And that can have an impact on appetite. It doesn't mean we throw intuitive eating out the door. It just means, you know what? We're going to use some nourishment as self-care to get through this healing part, nutrition rehabilitation. We can still be looking at things like satisfaction and respecting your body and so forth. There's many ways to work through this.
And I even think people who maybe just have been dieting for so long look at this and think, well, I don't know how to eat now.
Well, you know what? I tell you, I hear that probably even more than the trust thing. And so one of the ways that I like to address that is, well, you know, let's take a look at that. And I've had patients crying and they'll say, I can count the macros in a single pee. I can count, you know, and I have no doubt. And now with all these tracking apps and whatever, it's unfortunate because they can just, you know, anyway. So what ends up happening is that every time you are tracking or outsourcing your eating to a meal plan or some rules, it's at the expense of disconnection to yourself. So sometimes I look at, you know, well, how long has it been that you've actually listened to your body as it relates to your eating and your needs? And quite often I hear that the answer is never, or I was put on the diet at the age of 5, you know? And so I'll say, it's really understandable then. You know, it's like someone, if they learned something basic, like riding a bike, if you learned how to ride a bike when you're a kid, not a big deal. But if you've never rode a bike and now you're an adult, it can be a scary process and it's so wobbly, but it's only through the practice and through the support, in this case of a healthcare practitioner specializing in this, it's actually possible. It's practice. And so when you haven't had the practice of connecting to your body, because our culture is dismal at that, you know, it's starting to get better. I'm starting to see actually a lot more embodiment practices in the realms of therapy and all kinds of different healing that's starting to change. But as a culture, we don't usually self-connect like that. So I'll say, of course you don't. And so it can be really frustrating. It's why I came up with this little activity. In fact, if you want, you can follow along. And we actually have it in the Intuitive Eating Workbook, where I have somebody take a pen in their hand and put it in their dominant hand. For most people, it's right-handed. And I say, okay, can you take this piece of paper and write your signature in a legible way? And take as much time as you need. And they laugh when I say that. It's like, oh, that's a piece of cake, you know? Okay, great, great, great. Can we now shift hands, put it in your non-dominant hand? For most people, that's their left hand. And can you do the same thing? Take as much time as you want. And oh, it suddenly changes. You know, there's a struggle, there's a wobbliness. And then afterwards we process it and I'll say, well, this is interesting. You know, you know what your name is, you know how to spell. Your brain knows all. You have access to the brain. You have this knowledge. Why is there a difference in the quality of the work? We'll talk about the difference in the quality of work and how it felt and so on. And ultimately is the non-dominant hasn't had the practice. It hasn't had the experience. And so similarly, that's what we see with intuitive eating. People can have an understanding of it, an intellectual understanding, but if they haven't had the practice of checking in, of course it's scary. Of course you don't know how to eat, but it's a practice that can be relearned. It's something you knew how to do a long time ago. until diet culture took over in all its different types of ways. You know, healing is possible. If people remember nothing else, that's what I'd want them to remember. Healing is possible, you know, and it takes it's different timelines for different people, depending on the complexity of their situation. It's so common that in addition to like an eating disorder or being in disordered eating or just diet culture, there's often other things that are going on, family of origin issues, trauma issues, maybe other kinds of things going on like mood disorders. And so the more complex your history, the more complex the healing. It doesn't mean you can't do it, but it's really important not to compare what you're doing with somebody else that has no relevance on you. You know, and sometimes I joke with my patients when they get stuck in that comparison trap. It's like, you know, when you go to the bathroom and everyone goes at the same time, like maybe you're at a concert and there's a break. Do you compare how much you pee to someone else next to you? And you say, oh my God, I'm doing it wrong. Oh my God, I feel so guilty. They're peeling so much better. And it's so funny. It's hilarious. But in a way, when we do all this comparison with eating, that's what we're doing. You know, when we pee, this is actually, I'm going to get into some little science if I may. So one of the mechanisms that this is all rooted in is something called interoceptive awareness. Mm-hmm. And so what this is, it's the ability to perceive physical sensations within your body. You might be thinking, so what? Well, that includes, you know, hunger and fullness, includes feeling a rapid heart rate, includes feeling your bladder needing emptying, but it also includes the physical sensations from emotion. And so this is a powerful treasure trove to get your needs met, both biologically and psychologically. But when you've been at war with your body, you tend to be at war with the messenger, being body sensation, you know? And so we start and look back at this and look at what might be the next step forward for you. What do you need in order to take a step in your recovery or a step in this intuitive eating? And so what I say for people out there, depending on what stage you are in recovery, you know, you might be in some kind of structured eating plan, and that has a role in recovery, but you can still be connecting with your body even when that's the case as well. But it's going to be important to consult with your team on this. You know, you can say, oh my God, I heard this podcast. I think I want to do this. And I'll say, awesome. But let's make sure you're checking in with your team in terms of the timing and what it is that you might need and those kinds of things.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm wondering too, how would you speak to somebody who's still stuck on the labels, the diet culture in terms of like the foods they allow themselves to eat and don't allow themselves to eat, because that's such an emotional thing too. I think you said it very well, you know, back in the 80s, fat was like the demon and like carbs were like, eat all the carbs you want. And now it's so different, right? It's like carbs are bad and like, right. And so there's still that, if I eat this, I'm bad. And if I eat this, I'm good. And where does that play in?
Well, yeah, it plays into big time because you're actually talking about the rules of eating. And so that's a disruptor to self-connection, because now you're living in your head, in your mind with these rules, as opposed to what's happening with my body. What does my body need right now? So many times what I do with this is, and if this sounds good to the listeners, they can be doing this right now. It can be really helpful to just start jotting down, what are the list of your food rules? And it's okay not to do them at one time, because it's hard to have them all come up. You might know the big ones, but as the week unfolds, like, oh, there's another rule. And what I'm looking at, there's nothing wrong with having food preferences, but when there's rigidity around this, if you're judging yourself as a good or bad person, if you're having morality around this, this is problematic. And especially then looking at how this is disrupting the quality of your life, you know? So I've had patients who get really stuck to these food rules, and now they're out with their friends, especially now with the pandemic opening up and being able to socialize again. And it's a great celebration to be in contact with your friends and family. But if your mind is stuck on the discourse and all that background anxiety about what you can and can't eat, you have left the relationship. Your body is at the table, but your mind is somewhere else. And people can pick up on that, you know, and I don't say this to scare anyone, but rather it's we need to look at what's my why in recovery. Why do you want to recover? Not because of what I say or you say or your team or your parents or your loved ones, but what is it for you and why do you want to recover? And I find that it becomes very helpful when there's days that are just tough, because there are days that are just tough. And, you know, I've had patients that just want to get rid of all the food rules right now and today. And on the one hand, that's awesome. But on the other hand, it's really overwhelming. We don't have to do it like that. We can start with the least scariest rules and start becoming a little more flexible with them. And sometimes I like to find out, well, who said, who made this rule? Who came up with that one? You know, we don't have to always know the origin, but I think sometimes it helps, because the more diet plans that you've been on by whatever name you call it, you know, the Whole 30 versus the cute, whatever, is suddenly, even when you've been off that diet, the remnant that's left are these food rules that still haunt you. You know, it's like these shoulds. I'm like, well, who said so? Who said they could be the boss of my body? You know, you're in charge. Only you know what feels right, what tastes good, what's going to honor your hunger and satisfy your fullness, and discovering these kinds of things. So what happens is the more rules you have, you get further and further away from yourself. I've had patients in tears saying, I don't even know what I like to eat anymore because I have so much fear. And that even the want and the desire sometimes is left out because of all this fear and anxiety. So, you know, we start slowly. Let's try a little bit of something. I have many patients that are terrified of carbohydrates. And so looking at, you know, what's one step we can take in that direction? We don't have to look at all carbohydrates and all foods, but what's maybe one food we can look at incorporating? What would you need in order to do this? What do you need in order to feel safe? How can I support you? What kind of support do you need from your family and friends? And it can be something as simple as, you know, it'd be really helpful if my parents or my loved ones don't make comments on what I'm eating, or I haven't seen you eat dessert before. What a relief. Well, that can make someone feel pretty self-conscious. So looking at those kinds of things and setting up some boundaries and so forth. So, yeah.
Yeah, I can see how that would be really scary for someone who, you know, has told themselves for years and years, I don't trust myself around ice cream. You know, if I have it, I'm going to eat the whole thing. And to think about taking this on, you know, ice cream is bad. You know, they've convinced themselves all they like is salad and vegetables. And then to think about doing this and then to have ice cream for the first time, like I would see how that's very scary for someone, even someone listening to this going, I can't do that. I don't trust myself. Right.
And then what I say is you don't have to, we can start small, or we can start out somewhere, not even bring it in where it might feel more scary, you know. And I'm going to address something that you said, because I see this a lot, this fear, I'm going to eat the whole thing, I'll never stop. And what I say that kind of thinking is a reflection of the deprivation. And so sometimes I'll ask patients, you know, do you feel like you're walking around just one bite away from a binge? They're like, yeah, how'd you know? Well, that's what happens when you're constantly trying to trick and fake out hunger. You know, your body's actually hungry. So there's a kernel of truth to this. It's not that you are going to binge, but there's this hunger that has not been assuaged. And so that's why even before looking at the rules and even looking at making peace with food, especially when we're working with somebody who's just in the beginning stages of recovery, let's make sure we're having adequate nourishment. Let's make sure we're having adequate nourishment within a timely manner, you know, and this timely manner thing has become even more important as diet culture has taken off and all the different levels of fasting, you know, in spite of the very little information looking at the unintended consequences of these things, you know. So that might be a first place to start. We don't have to start with the big scary stuff. And it might seem all scary. I've had patients tell me that too. So we start with one thing. What foods do you feel safe eating currently? I might do that. What are your list of safe foods? Okay, maybe within just this list of safe foods, we can figure out what might be adequate in terms of energy. And I'm really clear, you know, it's not that I'm endorsing just eating those foods, but I want at least getting eating toward enough. And once we get eating toward enough, let's see what we can do about branching out, you know, because I don't like to overwhelm patients. It's anxiety provoking to eat more food. It's anxiety provoking to eat new food. So why be heaping on all these anxieties at once if we don't have to? So sometimes I call it upside down nutrition, you know. The priority first is let's nourish the body with enough energy that is responsible for some of this food drive and the fear that's going on. At your one bite away from a binge, your body's very hungry, you know, and that might scare you, that intensity of which it's happening, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You've shared so much. I'm so glad you clarified so many things and, you know, got the confusion to, you know, we dealt with the confusion because I know a lot of it is out there, and I'm so sorry that you are being misquoted. And
you know what? I'm not the only one. It's something I've learned just to accept, and I do the best that I can. And, but yeah, it happens.
And you have written a new book, Intuitive Eating for Every Day. And, So I don't know if you want to just briefly, I know we're coming to an end. I don't know if you want to briefly speak about that.
Oh, thank you. You know what? I would love to, because there's a kind of a little story that comes out as to why I even wrote this book. And, you know, I've had patients over the years that in session, they'll write down some things I say. They would come back in a follow-up and quote me, go, oh my God, that's good. But more importantly, that sounds funny. More importantly, it was helpful to them. And they'd say, you know, I wish I could just carry around in my back pocket. And so intuitive eating for every day is basically 365 days of intuitive eating, looking at different themes, not just the principles, but looking at supportive things like the attunement disruptors, how to let go of diet culture, how to set boundaries, how to have compassion for yourself, you know, and just even little mantras like, you know, recovery is not, intuitive eating is not an issue of pass and go, you know, it's discovery and learning. So they're like little bite sizes of intuitive eating, as opposed to the big book, which can seem really overwhelming. And you can do it any way you want to. You can start wherever you want to. I usually recommend starting in the beginning, but it's kind of a support tool is the way that I look at it, you know?
Awesome. Yeah. All right. Well, Evelyn, thank you so much for being here. It's been such a pleasure. Really.
Thank you.
I think people have gotten a lot out of this. So.
It flew by. It absolutely flew by.
All right. And I will have all of your information about how people can find out about your book and all of your social media information. So make sure you all go to the show notes after the show. All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
This podcast is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regards to the subject matter covered. It is given with the understanding that neither the host, the publisher, or the guest are rendering legal, accounting, clinical, or any other professional information. If you want a professional, you should find one.